Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante along with Dustin Schutte. Dustin, it's week one. We're finally here. It's college football coming up.
Yeah, we get our first taste of Big Ten football this week. We got the little appetizer over the weekend with week zero and Farmageddon, which is an outstanding nickname for a rivalry game. But yeah, I'm excited. We should have we get our first glimpse of what these 18 teams in the Big Ten are going to look like this year.
Yes, we do. And just speaking of Farmageddon, that was the one game I did watch. What a sloppy game. I know there was rain and all, but that was not a well-played game. And I still loved it, but it
Jim,
was still not a well-played game.
No, it was terrible until about the last, 17, 18 minutes. Fourth quarter, it got really interesting, but the first three quarters were kind of a disaster. But a funny story I've got to tell you about this. I have a friend who puts a few coins down on a game here or there, and he told me he wasn't going to gamble at all in week zero or week one. Well, that went out the window after a little peer pressure because I don't gamble, but I'm perfectly fine spending somebody else's money. He bet the under on, which was 51 and a half. He bet under on Kansas State, Iowa State. And what was it? It was 24 to 21. And Iowa State picked up that first down and thought it was going to be a touchdown. His elbow comes up a half inch short of the goal line. He wins his bet. He went from, he sent me so many expletives in the text message to being the happiest person. I've never been so invested in a $5 wager of something that was not my own money. It was fun to watch it that way because I'm not a betting person. That game was a perfect example as to why I could not do it. But he always sends me his weekly picks or whatever, and that's my version of gambling. So it was hilarious to see that major shift from what the hell am I doing to I'm all in next week.
You live vicariously through your buddy.
Yep.
I will wager also. I'd like to think I'm better than I actually am, which is the typical sports better. Okay. We all think we have something going. And I actually do try to make it so that I don't bet just to bet. I, think about it. Like right now, I've already said ahead of time, Penn State, Oregon, I'm betting Penn State. Okay. I just think everything is just set up for them to win. It's a huge Penn State has to win a big game this season, right? They have to. That's the pressure. That's the gun to their head. Well, they've only got two big games, Oregon and Ohio State. Ohio State is in Columbus. There's the whole Ohio State thing. But I think Penn State has a ridiculous out-of-conference schedule. It's awful. They're going to spend those three games plus a bye week prepping for Oregon. It's a whiteout night game. You've got Oregon traveling the length of the country with a new quarterback. Penn State's got all the veterans. They've got just everything is pointed to this game for them. So, Dustin, I am, announcing it, I'm putting it out there. The spread has shifted a little bit. Don't care. I think this is a game that's just made for Penn State to win. And if they don't, I want to be more frustrated than your friend would have been if that touchdown would have counted. So anyway, let's get talking about that week one coming up. And you know what? There are three top 10 matchups in this first week of the season, Dustin. I want so badly to be upset about these teams with their god-awful out-of-conference schedules. But we got three top 10 games highlighted by the Big Ten versus the Southeast Conference. I'm sorry, it's actually Ohio State versus Texas. But it might as well be the Big Ten versus the Southeast Conference, Dustin.
Yeah, that one's going to get built up that way. And the winning team, the conference of the winning team is just going to continue to gloat over the other conference, especially if it's the Big Ten, because we've had to hear all offseason. And I don't know if you've seen this either, Jim, but the FPI came out, the ESPN's latest FPI, which is a garbage metric. I don't know who invented it, but it's terrible. It is the closest thing to propaganda I've ever seen in sports ever. But they had 12 of the 16 SEC teams ranked, and I believe 5 from the Big Ten. I think the second most. So, like, right there, you can tell the discrepancy, right? So I think all offseason, the Big Ten has had to listen to Greg Sankey and all these talking heads at ESPN, Paul Feinbaum, Peter Burns. Oh, the SEC is so deep. The strength of schedule in the SEC is a lot better. Blah, 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 blah. I think if the Ohio State beats Texas, with Texas being ranked number one and considered to be probably the college football or the national championship favorite this year, I think there's going to be a lot of comments from Big Ten fans about the SEC shortly after that game concludes if the Buckeyes pull it out.
Well, Paul Feinbaum already has a problem with Big Ten listeners calling into his show. Ohio State, and by the way, Paul Feinbaum has already said Texas is going to blow out Ohio State. You know, Ohio State doesn't have a chance in this game. And I've never been a Big Ten fanboy, okay? Mm-hmm. If anything, I don't like how Penn State's been treated since day one, okay? You're not old enough to remember day one. But trust me,
I do remember day one.
Okay. Well, were you one of those who hated having Big Ten coming into the Big Ten?
No, I remember being like in my my parents. I was not old enough to really grasp the concept of somebody being added to a conference, but I do remember this. It was a discussion point in my house of like, why are they adding Penn State? It was just like a curious geographical type thing back then.
It was, and I got a sidetrack, so we may as well keep going. But at the time, nobody at Penn State was happy with it, okay? Joe Paterno was actually trying to get an all-Eastern football or all-sports conference. It's a conversation for another day. But he wanted to get into a conference, and this is where he was often ahead of his time, because he understood that it would be a consistent paycheck every year. Yes, there were years Penn State didn't need it, but there were other years they could. So he understood having the structure and background of a conference and what that did for you. And first of all, there were many schools who did everything they could in their power to keep Penn State out. I think they made it by like one vote. The coaches weren't happy because the presidents were the one who made the decision. And the officiating, you think it's bad now, Dustin.
Yeah, sure.
It was not good, okay? So it made Penn Staters not really warm up to the Big Ten because they didn't feel welcome. Redheaded stepchild kind of deal. Well, now, I swear to God, the Southeast Conference and the Paul Feinbaums and the ESPNs of the world have now made me do something I hate myself for, Dustin. I think I'm going to be rooting for Ohio State.
Yeah.
Which was impossible to happen. But there's so much of this SEC Big Ten thing going on that it's just – It's out of hand now. It's awful. And as you pointed out, here you have ESPN, the network that runs the playoffs. They're the ones who broadcast the. Yes, it's in their best interest for the Southeast Conference to have as many teams as possible to be looked at as the superior conference. And so that's what they're going to do, Dustin.
Yeah, that's for the longest time when we had a four-team field, I didn't understand how it wasn't some sort of conflict of interest that ESPN had SEC Network, ACC Network, had the rights to the College Football Playoff selection show, and then had the College Football Playoff games. Like, to me, that was just, it made no sense from a business. It was almost monopolistic because they have a vested interest then at that point, right? And so that gives them more to talk about throughout the season. It gives them more to talk about later in the year. So I'm glad that they were able to at least get other networks involved in this. But it's a very weird thing. And this is, I talked about this, it's very unappealing to me because it's not just, now it's not just SEC versus Big Ten, it's Fox versus ESPN. Like, so now it's, you're digging your heels in, and now you're hiring people like Dave Portnoy to come out and be the Big Ten mouthpiece, which I could not be less interested in anything in my life. I'm just going to abandon all college pregame football shows from here to the rest of eternity, apparently. But it's just, I don't know. It's what a crazy world, because somebody made this point a few years ago. Like, why would you be a cheerleader for your conference if a team in your conference wins the Big Ten or wins the national championship? It becomes infinitely harder to recruit and things of that nature. So I don't know. I know this started in the four-team playoff, but it's taken on a life of its own.
Well, it's kind of forced now because of the way the selection committee works, and we're going to get into this a bit, is somehow the criteria has changed to now weigh strength of schedule more than it had previously, which the Southeast Conference looks as a victory. And Dustin, I'm beginning to suspect that a four-loss Alabama is going to get in ahead of a one-loss Illinois.
Yeah, I have lots of thoughts about this, so I can't wait until the second quarter to really dive into this because, yeah, there's some problems I have with this new criteria, quote-unquote.
Well, it's always been part of – nobody on the committee was said to say, hey, I'm going to pick the best records or so. They've already done it where they'll take – strength of schedule has been part of the criteria. And I didn't realize there was like a percentage. Well, it used to be 30%. Now it's 35%. It's not like that. It's some weasley worded concept to appease the Southeast Conference. And what I'm afraid of is when it makes the decision, it's going to appease the Southeast Conference. We will talk about it when we get back.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante. He is Sports Illustrated Big Ten writer Dustin Schutte. Dustin, if you plan on heading into Happy Valley for a ball game this year, I want to tell you where you need to stay, and that is gopsurv.com. This is where they have the RVs all set up and ready for you. Got the electricity going, the water going. They have the fire pits, the projection TV, the pavilion. You show up on Friday. Don't leave until Sunday. It's a fantastic way to spend the weekend. And maybe the best part of it is they have that shuttle taking you in and out of the game. You don't have to worry about the hassle of parking. You can enjoy a nice beverage of your choice because you're not driving. They take care of that for you. You want more information? Give a call, 800-519-8467, or go to gopsurv.com. You will not regret it. Great way to spend the weekend. So, Dustin, we were starting to talk about the selection committee and the weighing the strength of schedule and all that. But before we get there, I got to at least hit my agenda here. We started talking Ohio State, Texas. I think Ohio State is currently just a very slight favorite. So Paul Feinbaum apparently has some influence because it used to be about 3 points or so, home field advantage being the difference. My last look at the spread, it's down to 1.5. Dustin, how about making your pick? Texas, Ohio State.
This is probably going to feel like a homer pick, but look, I think a lot of has been made of Arch Manning, and probably for good reason, but it's not like this is also a kid going into his first season as a starting quarterback at Texas. Same thing with Julian Sain at Ohio State. And in these games, I know that Ohio State lost Jim Knowles, the defensive coordinator. In these games where you believe the talent to be very equal. And again, we now today in college football, it's kind of hard because there's so much turnover in the transfer portal and things change and coaching staffs and all that. So it's kind of hard to get a grasp. But I always think when you have teams that are equally matched, who has the best player? And I think Ohio State has the best player in Jeremiah Smith. And to me, that's the difference in this type of game. Will now, obviously, Julian Sain's got to get him the football, but and let me throw this out there too: tight end Max Clair, who has been really good in fall camp for Ohio State. I just think that Ohio State once again has too many weapons. It'll be interesting. The fact that game's played at home, I'm giving the edge to the Buckeyes in that one.
You know what? I was going to accuse you of being a homer if you picked Ohio State. So you took that away from me. You also took away my reason for thinking Ohio State would win. Absolutely love Jeremiah Smith way more than a Penn State person should ever think of an Ohio State player. And so when Ohio State has the ball, they're going to have the best player on the field. Mm-hmm. When Ohio State doesn't have the ball, they will still have the best player on the field in Caleb Downs, okay?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yep.
So, and at home, and I think they have a lot to prove. I think I'm with you. And the points you also made about Arch Manning, this is he's got everything on his shoulders. You know, he has the name, the buildup, and all that. And you know what? If he were really the absolute best player, wouldn't he have gotten on the field more?
That's a good point. If he was so head and shoulders and the best prospect we've seen in X amount of years, like everybody wants to anoint every quarterback, you're probably not losing you're probably beating out Quinn Ewers for that starting job. I mean, it's just, I don't think he's going to be this. I don't want to say he's not going to be a revolutionary quarterback. We don't know. And to play your first game against the reigning national championship champions in their house is such a tall task that it's just I feel like he's gonna make some early mistakes in that game. He may settle in, but in a game like this, it's a football's a game of inches. One or two mistakes early in that game could be incredibly costly for Texas.
All right, I'm going to put you down for picking the Big Ten, the Buckeyes, to win that game. All right, Dustin, when we finished up the first segment and you were dying to talk about it, we've got, the Southeast Conference is going to 9 games, and they managed to influence the playoff committee to say, hey, we're going to consider strength of schedule more than we have in the past.
Yeah, 9 games, and then they're requiring them to play one Power 4 team out of conference. So they're going to end up playing a minimum of 10 Power 4 opponents, which probably means we're going to get a 5-11 playoff format would be my guess, since the SEC finally caved and we are on equal footing in college football, at least the Big Ten and the SEC, with the 9-game schedule and then probably a majority of the teams. Here's my gripe, though, and I give a tip of the cap to the SEC for finally going to 9 conference games. It's long overdue. It's been a decade that the Big Ten has done this. The SEC should have done it years ago. The problem I have with the strength of schedule metric when it comes to evaluating teams is, once again, they are not providing any formula or telling the public or the fans how they're gauging strength of schedule. Is it based off ESPN's FPI? Is it based off top 25? If you go and you look at college basketball, Jim, and I know this is two completely different sports, but you can find metrics, how they measure quality wins, quad one wins, things of that nature. There's something the public can grasp, and whether you agree with it or not, at least you can point to it and say, hey, this is how the committee values this team, this opponent, and it helps in terms of you understanding how they come up with the field of 68. Now, they don't always make the right decision. They do make mistakes still, but at least there's something that you can kind of point to and follow along. I don't know why in college football that we are so reluctant to have like these hidden secrets about why teams are selected or what the criteria is. I think if they just provided that and stopped treating us like we were stupid, I think people would be far more accepting of what the field would look like, because we'd say, okay, we know what the formula is. Maybe there's an explanation as to why if Alabama would have gotten in over Indiana, maybe there's an explanation, or maybe the explanation is provided as to why Indiana got in over Alabama, but everything's so secretive. And I don't understand, like, again, tell me how you're measuring strength of schedule.
Well, you know, that it's an interesting concept where I think of myself as an analytical person, okay? And there should be ways, numbers, black and white kind of things, numbers, to tell us these things. However, and the biggest number is, did you get a W or did you get an L?
Yeah. Okay?
And if you want to dig deeper, if my W was against a team that was, you know, undefeated other than their loss to us, that certainly bests you getting a win against a team that is – oh, for the season. So there's quality to win. But I think that there's so many small things. I'm not sure you can quantify all of it. And I feel like the committee wants to allow themselves a little bit of leeway. So is a loss by Ohio State to Oregon early in the season, where they traveled cross country and played pretty much an even game and ended up losing by a point or 2 points or whatever it was. So, yep, it's a loss, and it's a loss to a good team, but it's also a very close loss on the road, you know, or were there weather issues or fluke plays, things like allow me as part of the committee to understand that. Now, I think I can say pretty easily everybody on the committee knew Alabama's schedule was tougher than Indiana's.
Right.
Tiebreaker, they're both, you know, 11-1. Alabama gets in, Indiana does not. Very simple. You lost 3 games, though. You lost 3 games, and you lost 2 really god-awful games that you should have never lost, okay? I don't need a formula. I don't need math. Would Alabama still be favored over Indiana if they played each other? Yes, Dustin, they would. I will concede that. Doesn't matter. They didn't play to their potential. And at some point, the games actually matter what happens on the field. So the conversation, especially from the Southeast Conference, you would have thought that it's a bunch of idiots there who've been putting 6-6 teams in the playoffs and holding out undefeated conference champions. Oh, wait a minute. They did do that once. But to me, that's the only mistake that they've really made, blatant mistake over the years. Okay. And last year, the first year, it was 12 teams where the selection committee was so important to it, to all this. I think they got it perfect. Could you argue, you know, this team? But they're like 50-50 flip the coin
right.
kind of debates where you're going to upset half the fan base. Anyway, whichever way you went, I think the committee's actually done a pretty good job.
I agree with you, and I think they made all the right moves last year. I think Florida State still should have got in. I don't care what happened after. I think they deserved to get in a couple of years ago when they were undefeated, won the conference championship, even without their quarterback. The concern I have, though, Jim, is the SEC pitching this and the College Football Playoff Selection Committee basically eating it up, you know, taking the pill with a spoonful of sugar. And what I'm afraid is that little bit of leeway you're talking about is then to help brand recognition, because probably more so people are, no matter who is playing in the March Madness tournament, people are going to watch because they want to see upsets. Like, that is why people watch that first weekend of the NCAA tournament. They want to see Cinderellas. It helps if North Carolina, Duke, Kansas, Arizona, teams like that are in it, but you're not going to be dissuaded from watching that if one or two of those teams is not in the field. If you do this in the College Football Playoff, imagine Alabama, Ohio State, Michigan, I'm just throwing out names, Clemson, are not in there, you're going to see a severe drop in your figures of viewing. Now, it may still outnumber a lot of other sports, but those carry a lot of weight. So if you have a 10-2 Ohio State team, but they have, let's say they're in Penn State situation this year where they have two big games, Michigan and Penn State, they lose both of those, but because they're Ohio State and they started the season ranked, I don't know, number 4 in the country, they get the nod over, let's say, an 11-1, I don't know, Missouri team that had maybe one ranked win on their schedule. I don't know. I'm throwing out options out there, and it's probably not a very logical scenario, but that's just one of my fears.
We're going to pick it up from there right after this break.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Dustin Schutte. I'm Jim Galante. It's quarter number 3 of our show. We kind of ended up veering towards the playoff situation like we always seem to do, Dustin. My final take on it is we're afraid of undue influence by the Southeast Conference. The Big Ten, Tony Petitti, he's doing everything, waving the Big Ten flag. And what's interesting to me and what I really hate is the two conferences, the two commissioners, Fox and ESPN, have all conspired to make us think about conferences as opposed to individual teams.
Yep.
And I think it's so unfair to start saying, oh, wow, the Southeast Conference has tougher schedules. Look at individual teams. And the answer is yes, they do. When you look at, you know, like South Carolina always has to play Clemson out of conference. You know, Florida plays Florida State or Miami out of conference, those rivalry games. But you get other teams who aren't doing – very simple, and I'll use the team that I follow, Penn State. They're playing 3 cupcakes, and Ohio State's playing Texas. Michigan is playing Oklahoma. I wish the conversation would be more about the individual teams and their schedules versus doing it all by conference. So, and I do think the committee has overall done a pretty good job of judging the individual teams. So, like, Indiana in the Big Ten, by the luck of the draw, did not have a great schedule last year. They had a lot of cupcakes.
Yeah.
What I do wish, though, and this is my segue to get back to talking about actual games, Dustin, is what I hate is Penn State's out-of-conference schedule. It's ridiculous. It's awful. It's almost meaningless. I wish now the Big Ten would implement that same rule the Southeast Conference has, which is, all right, you've got nine conference games. You got to play at least one more game versus a Power Four team. And it doesn't have to be Alabama. It doesn't have to be Georgia. But give us something interesting. And over the last couple of years, when Penn State played West Virginia, a great deal of interest in that, Dustin. When they played Auburn, great deal of interest. They were different teams. There were teams from Power Four conferences. I think that makes the difference. All right. With that said, you made your pick on Ohio State, Texas this weekend. The rest of the Big Ten schedule, is there anything that intrigues you?
Yes. I don't know if it's going to intrigue anybody else, though. First of all, I think Tulane is supposed to be really good. So that Northwestern Tulane game is kind of intriguing to me. That's like a sickos committee type game.
Tulane is favored by 5.5 points.
Yeah. That makes sense. So I'm interested in that. Of course, for me and people who watch the show regularly know I cover Purdue pretty closely. So I'm just interested to see what Purdue looks like. I know they only play Ball State. It's probably going to be an easy win, but just to kind of get a first glimpse of them. But I think the one game we could probably all agree on is going to be that Utah-UCLA game. That's going to be the first game for Nico at quarterback. It's going to be Deshaun Foster, who I know they finished 5-7 last year. I was really impressed with what Deshaun Foster did on such short notice, basically, with that team. So I'm really intrigued to see what he does. They get Utah at home. Utah has been a really good football team when they were in the Pac-12. They consistently are ranked in the top 25. So that's going to be a really fun early test. The only problem is we got to stay up to 11 o'clock at night to watch kickoff. So that's a little discouraging.
Oh, you're turning into an old man, Dustin.
Yeah, I was just going to say, for somebody starting to get older and older by day. So that, to me, that's probably I think the Northwestern Tulane game, just because that one might get ugly in Tulane's favor. So that intrigues me. And then UCLA Utah is probably the only other one. I guess maybe Washington Colorado State, because I think you and I both expect Washington to be a little bit better than most people. So that one intrigues me. But that, again, that's another one that's not kicking off until freaking midnight. So.
Well, also, Nebraska at Cincinnati's not a bad.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, that's a good pick. Yes.
Not a bad matchup. And I would think that you better apologize to your fiance for overlooking the corner.
Do you know what's funny, Jim, is we are actually going to that game because they play 2 days before Purdue. So I'm in the clear. I can go and enjoy a live college football game before I actually have to work. So we're going. And I was kind of scrolling down and looking at Saturday's games and forgot about those earlier in the week, but that's okay. I don't think she watches the show, so.
Gee, thanks. All right. You know, the rest of the conference, though, has some of these absolute cupcake games. Just in listing them, everything, some of the point spreads, 17, 17, 20, 17, 14, 22, 36, 35, 45, 45. Really crazy. But it does lead me to, first of all, I love to do this early in the season. I'm going to quiz you a little bit here, Dustin.
Okay.
Illinois, 45-point favorite over Western Illinois. What's Western Illinois' nickname?
The Leathernecks.
Oh, my goodness. that was the one I thought would really get you. All right. USC, 35-point favorite over Missouri State.
They are the Bears.
Oh, my goodness. 2 for 2. These are easy for you. Western Michigan.
The Broncos.
Very good. Last one, New Mexico.
The Lobos. Everyone's a Lobo. Woof, woof, woof.
One last one. Here's the bonus one. Florida Atlantic.
The Owls.
Are you, you got a cheat sheet there?
I do not have a cheat sheet. I was surprised you didn't bring up University of Albany because I believe they are the Great Danes.
Yes. Yes, I believe they are. Who are they playing?
They play Iowa.
Okay, I missed that game on my list. So let me go ahead.
I was going to say, so the first two that you mentioned, Western Illinois, I have a good friend who went to college at Western Illinois. So that's one reason why I knew that one. And he was like, I remember we had a very conversation after one night, maybe a beverage was had or two. And he was like, I don't understand what a leatherneck is. So he just... The other one is Missouri State and Konzo Martin, former Purdue Boilermaker, the head coach at Missouri State now.
So I
had a little bit of a head start on both of those.
You knew the Bears. Western Michigan, at first I thought, oh no. I always, one of my favorite hats of all time, I had a Central Michigan Chippewa hat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, which I thought was the coolest hat and a great team nickname. All right, we've got a situation here. The Penn State playing Nevada, like a 45-point favorite. And you see all these other games, Dustin. When you watch a game like that, or if your team is playing a game like that, are you looking for anything special when you watch a game like that?
I don't. I think it's really hard in those type of games. I think if you are in a situation, again, I'm just going to use Purdue as an example, where you are bringing in a lot of new players and you have a new staff, you probably are looking for certain things. If you're Penn State and you're a team that's thought to compete for a national championship, I don't know what you really take away from these games, because you have the advantage in the coaching, you have the advantage in skill, you have the advantage in size. Like, I guess you're almost looking more for weaknesses than you are strengths. If Nevada is able to, you know, just tear through Penn State's offensive line, you're saying, oh boy, that could be an issue when we play bigger defensive lines. If receivers can't beat cornerbacks, you're saying, oh boy, how are we going to be able to play with guys like Caleb Downs at Michigan secondary, things of that nature. So I think in those games, you don't really look at the strengths as much, because you expect them to be dominant. You look for little things that could be weaknesses for that team and say, I think Oregon last year was a perfect example. In their first two games, we talked about, boy, that Oregon offensive line does not look championship caliber. And turns out they got some things fixed. They started to gel later in the season. They played a lot better. But I think that's in these first three games, if you're Penn State, those are probably what you're looking for more than anything. And I will say this. Sorry, I didn't mean to continue on this soapbox, but I think you're also probably looking how consistent is Drew Aller, and for no other reason other than to just get kind of into a rhythm, get into a flow, build confidence, because after those first three games, he's got to be ready and sharp for that game against Oregon.
Yeah, I think those are all really good points. I think, you know, the obvious one, you want to come out of these games healthy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. You're not looking at the top end where they're, you know, obviously vastly superior to the opponent. You want to look at like, oh, is there an issue here or an issue there? And for Penn State specifically, it's often been they'll start slow against inferior teams. You know, it's that first possession, run, pass, punt, you know, and it's either a drop pass or, you know, something that makes you just roll your eyes and you know they're going to win. But that starting slow, as you said, if it comes up against a better team, not going to happen. The other thing is, how is the depth and where is the depth and who is the depth? You know, there's players you start to hear about in each camp. You know, the true freshman who comes in, that no name who walks in and is starting to dominate. And Penn State has had a couple of players like that. They specifically, they have a kid coming in, Chaz Coleman, who didn't get a lot of play as a recruit, but now is just, he's blowing up. You hear from the coaches, the players as a defensive end. So those are the things that I think I look for in some of these games. And I would think for some of these other teams, it's if there's a new quarterback, especially, you want to see how sharp he is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's – I think everybody in that week one game is focusing their attention on the quarterback. And sometimes it doesn't matter how much experience they have. I think if you were just trying to pull a name out here, if you were Justin Fields a few years ago, you probably don't care that much. But I think that there are still some questions about Drew Aller's game to the point where you're probably watching him and saying, okay, how does he look early in the season? How does he, you know, how does it look in year two of this offense? I think that's maybe the bigger question. How comfortable does he look? Like I said, can he throw the deep ball? And you don't get a lot of you're not going to get tested a lot in these first couple games, so how much do you really know? But I think getting into that rhythm is important before you play a team like Oregon.
And I think for Penn State fans specifically, we've seen plenty of Drew Aller versus the Nevadas of the world. Let's see him against the Oregons of the world. All right, we've got one more segment to go. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, quarter number four. He's Dustin, I'm Jim. We're talking all things Big Ten and college football in general. You know what? It's interesting. We finished up quarter number three talking about these first games, some of these mismatches. But, you know, what are you looking for in those kind of games? Well, there are not that many returning quarterbacks in all of college football.
Right.
You know, especially some of the better teams. So when I asked the question about who do you want to see, who are you excited to see? My generic answer, Dustin, is the quarterbacks.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that probably is true for me as well. We've talked about a lot on this show, Bryce Underwood at Michigan. I think both you and I think Michigan's a really talented team, but whether or not they're able to compete at the top probably depends on his arm and his ability to come in as a true freshman and to be able to perform. And that's a pretty tall task for him. Nico. And by the way, for people who don't know, I can't pronounce his last name. Quick aside, Jim. My fiance and I, she was like breaking it down, trying to tell me how to say his name. I still could not say it. I'm just like, it's just Nico because I cannot say his name. So there's that. Thank goodness I don't have to cover a lot of UCLA football because that would be a disaster. But aside from that, we also have Fernando Mendoza at Indiana. He's going to be a new quarterback. He played really well at Cal. This is going to be a somewhat new Indiana team. So curious to see how he does. Dante Moore at Oregon, new quarterback there as well. So I think there are a lot of, and I'm probably missing out on some guys too, but you've got Luke Altmyer at Illinois, who I think is probably behind Drew Aller, probably the second best quarterback in the Big, at least right now heading into the season. Dylan Raiola, his second season at Nebraska. What does he look like? Julian saying it, like you can continue to go down the list. There's just a lot of intrigue at that quarterback position in this conference this year. And I'm excited to see it.
Well, I'm with you, and I'll add a couple more names. How about Mark Gronowski for Iowa?
Oh, yeah. That's a good pull there, Jim.
And
I saved him for you.
Well, thanks. So And the one I'm really curious about returning quarterback is Dylan Raiola from Nebraska, where you have a guy who was so highly regarded coming in, Dustin. And so that second year, so much, so often from the freshman to sophomore year is when you will see that improvement. I'm curious what your thoughts are on him.
Yeah, I think he's really good. I think what's going to be interesting is, remember, they switched offensive coordinators late last season. It was, I think it was around maybe game eight when they brought in Dana Holgorsen from Marcus Satterfield. So that's going to, so he's had basically an entire offseason to kind of go through that offense, learn what Dana Holgorsen likes, what they're going to run. So I expect him to be a lot better. He kind of had those freshman ups and downs last season. I expect him to be more consistent. I don't know that he's going to be a top five quarterback in the Big Ten, but I don't think he necessarily needs to be to for Nebraska to be successful this year. So I think that that kind of that marriage there of working in Dana Holgorsen's system, having now a full year under his belt. I mean, we saw a big jump from Drew Aller from year one to year two as a starting quarterback. So I don't want to put that on him because that's a tall hurdle, but I do think he's going to be a lot better and make Nebraska a more formidable team this year.
And I think what's interesting, now you pointed out, well, he won't necessarily be one of the top five quarterbacks in the Big Ten, but I think he could be.
He could be.
And if he is, if he does make that kind of jump, what does that do for Nebraska? You know, somebody always comes out of that pack of the old Big Ten West. You know, who's it going to be? Is it a year ago it was Indiana? Will it be, you know, Iowa? Will it be Wisconsin? You know, I kind of like Nebraska because of the quarterback as a possible breakthrough team.
Well, and you look at their schedule, Cincinnati, Akron, Houston Christian, then they play Michigan, which again, that's a home game for them. That's kind of, I don't want to say it's a toss-up game. I'd probably give the edge to Michigan right now, but what is Bryce Underwood going to look like going into that game? And that's a game where, if I remember correctly, Sherrone Moore won't be on the sidelines, which I don't know that that makes a huge difference, but maybe that could be an advantage to Nebraska. Then after this schedule, Jim, Michigan State, Maryland, Minnesota, Northwestern. They could build up a lot of confidence heading into the month of November.
Very, very doable. I'm going to give you one other quarterback name that I'm looking forward to seeing, and I just think he has a chance. Damon Williams with Washington.
Yes, that's another good pick. I like that. I know they're very high on him out there, for sure.
And he's a dual threat quarterback. I love that in the college game. A kid who could beat you with his feet, you know, make a play, one or two of those third and long conversions, because they're able to get out of the pocket and run the ball for first down, makes such a huge difference.
Here's another one. Aiden Chiles at Michigan State is another one that last year it was like, that dude, he can launch the football. He can be really good, but he was also kind of a turnover machine, very inconsistent. They need him to be consistent this year if they want to be bowl eligible. I think he's the kind of player that can win you a game. He's also the player that will lose you a game.
Well, and I'm always glad you bring him up much more often than I do, and you bring up Michigan State much more often than I do. Sure. No, and here's why. I just now occurred to me. I never give Michigan State the benefit of the doubt because Penn State usually plays them at the end of the season, and Michigan State just mails it in that game. Yeah. They're just awful. And I know they start the season with a lot of excitement, like a lot of teams, but by the time Penn State sees them and I see them, they just mail it in. They're, you know, they've got the bus warming up after the first quarter. All right, Dustin, let's shift gears a little bit, because as much as I complain about some of these schedules that teams have, there are three top 10 matchups in week one of the season. We already talked about Texas, Ohio State, where you selected Ohio State to win it. We also have Clemson hosting LSU, Miami hosting Notre Dame. Two great games. I'll let you pick the order that we talk about them. Dustin?
Let's go LSU Clemson first, because I think that that's a really intriguing one from a coaching perspective.
Oh, it is. Dabo, Kelly. And we talked about the conferences in the Big Ten Southeast Conference, Texas, Ohio State. A year ago, it was the same kind of way with Clemson playing a big game early. Clemson, we all feel, is the class of the ACC. LSU, a good, not great Southeast Conference team, is, I think, the way most of us look at it. Boy, for ACC standard, they got to win that game, don't they?
I think so. I think so. And I think, Jim, that they're going to. We've seen LSU, what is it now, four straight, five? I don't remember what the number is, but they've lost a lot of season openers, and they've lost them in devastating fashion. And I think Penn State fans can probably agree on this. I don't know for sure. I'm really high on Tom Allen as a defensive coordinator. Don't know, you know, head coach didn't quite work out at Indiana, but I think he's a really good, can relate to his players on the defensive side. I think Clemson's going to be really good this year. And I think they're going to start the season with a win over LSU. And in Baton Rouge, they're going to be ready to run Brian Kelly out of town.
couldn't happen to a better guy. Anyway, but I'm kind of with you. What I like is, even though LSU has Nussmeier as the quarterback, Clemson with Cade Klubnik, that returning experience, a lot of people think he's the best quarterback in the country. Clemson has, you know, the defense. I think Tom Allen, he's a good fit there with Dabo. And, yeah, Clemson, I think this is a really important game for Clemson. It's also important for LSU, but it doesn't matter. I think they lose a lot of important games to them. But for Clemson, they're carrying the weight not only of their national championship hopes and their seeding hopes, but of the entire ACC.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair to say. I mean, and you can, we could probably discuss the other matchup that we're going to talk about. You could probably throw Miami in that category. For some reason, there are people that are really high on Florida State after a 2-10 season. I don't get that, but yeah, to me right now, it's probably Clemson and Miami is the class, and I think Clemson has a much better shot to win another national title for the ACC.
And this Notre Dame Miami game, speaking of Miami, just really, really intrigues me, because remember, Notre Dame not in a conference, playing independent schedule, huge, huge game for them. And for Miami, again, that whole ACC, the standard there, is the ACC good or not? Boy, if they come out of this with both Clemson and Miami winning, what a great day for the ACC and their playoff hopes.
Yeah, I mean, that would be, I mean, all of a sudden you would have people actually talking about the ACC as a formidable conference, even if it's just those two teams. So that would be huge for them. I don't think it's going to happen. I don't trust Mario Cristobal. I think Marcus Freeman has done an outstanding job at Notre Dame. And Miami, it's, if you have to pick a top 10 opponent to go on the road, Miami's almost the best case scenario, because they can't get people to Hard Rock Stadium. That may end up being somewhat of a home game for Notre Dame, if I'm being completely honest.
Oh, they will be well represented in the crowd. But, you know, I know this is projecting way out, but I just get the sense this is Miami playing for the playoffs.
I think that's fair. But I think Notre Dame is going to view that the same way, too. And I know that they've got a lot of change. Notre Dame went through a lot of changes. Marcus Freeman's done such a good job. And again, Mario Cristobal, it's kind of like Brian Kelly. I don't trust him in these type of games.
Is this going to be about which quarterback, and they're both getting new quarterbacks in there, is this going to be about which quarterback acclimates earliest in that first game?
Probably the one who makes the fewest mistakes, if I had to guess. That's usually what these games come down to when you have, again, so many two similar teams, the team that makes the fewest mistakes.
Okay, you pick Clemson over LSU, Notre Dame, Miami, your pick?
Notre Dame.
I hate to agree with you, but I do. All right, Dustin, that is it for our week one show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us again next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Whether a department outing, entertaining your clients, or reconnecting with your family and friends, let Revel XP take the hassle out of tailgating. Simply show up and immerse yourself in the tailgating experience. Full service includes bellhops helping upon arrival and tear down when you're ready to leave. Revel XP elevates your tailgate. Reach out to us directly at 814-933-4100 or go to revelxp.com for more info.